Hello and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast, a new series with me, Turtle Bunbury, in which I'm exploring the rich history of Ireland's waterways. In recent episodes, we've looked at the geology, the archaeology, and some of the early folklore around our rivers and lakes. We're now moving into the Christian era, and as you can imagine, Ireland's waterways had a big part to play in the way that Ireland became so famous as the island of saints and scholars. Now, I'm a sucker for a ruined medieval church. I love them. I love the peace, the serenity, the antiquity of them. But I know they're not wildly interesting to everyone. Nonetheless, over the next little while, I'm going to valiantly try and get you a little bit excited by the incredibly rich architectural legacy you'll find along every single waterway in Ireland that connects us right back to those early monasteries and the beginning, for better or worse, of the Christian era in Ireland. You're familiar with how the tale begins. A little under 2,000 years ago, a carpenter's son from Galilee, by name of Jesus, is crucified by the Romans. They called him the Son of God, the Messiah, a prophet who could walk on water and raise people from the dead. In the weeks and months before he was crucified, he spoke of love and kindness and the forgiveness of sins. Revolutionary concepts that found a willing audience in Ireland in the centuries that followed when the first Christians reached these shores. There's quite a lot of debate about who those first Christian missionaries were, but we obviously all know about St. Patrick, the ex-slave from afar who returns to Ireland and works his magic, converting the royals and the aristocracy first, and the rest of the people follow suit, and badum, Ireland, this island on the very frontier of the known world, becomes one of the most Christian places on planet Earth. It's an astonishing story that we're only just getting our heads around, combining all manner of mythology and indeed some truth, and, well, it had rather a lot of long-term consequences. I should underline that the conversion of Ireland was a very slow process. This island was still full of druids and people who worshipped the old gods for a large part of what we call the early Christian era. It wasn't as if St. Paddy arrived and the whole country said, "Wow, did you hear about the fellow who turned water into wine? I want to be on his team." Although I'm sure that particular parable won over quite a few devotees. But I want to focus on the role that Ireland's waterways played in all this, because how did those early Christian pioneers get around and spread the word? Where do they live? We're back to the waterways. For starters, an awful lot of those ancient monasteries were conveniently located on or very near our rivers and lakes. The waterways were the main highways by which people got about back when so much of this country was covered in wood. And it's sometimes hard to get to grips with that today because there's been so much heavy-duty deforestation over the last 400 or 500 years particularly, and that's completely changed our landscape. I mean, it wasn't all forest, but there were a lot more trees about when St. Patrick was doing the rounds. You should also bear in mind that when you look at a river like the Shannon or the Boyne or the Barrow today, there's been a huge amount of human graft to get them in the svelte shape they're in. Those rivers were an awful lot more sprawly and marshy 1,000 years ago. Christianity came to Ireland in a series of waves. Waves of monastic settlement that kicked off in the age of St. Patrick and kept going right through until the Normans and the medieval period, which is when you have the proper orders of monks, the Augustinians and the Dominicans and the Franciscans and so on. And you'll find really lovely examples of architecture from nearly all of those eras, those waves of Christianity. When you go about on Irish waterways, be it the Shannon or the Erne or the Boyne or the Barrow, or indeed any of the lochs. Take the Barrow, for instance, the goodly Barrow, which flows through southeast Ireland, through Leash and Kildare and Carlow and on to New Ross. The Barrow Valley was a hotspot for early Irish monasteries. You could start anywhere along the river, but let's take St. Mullins, an especially picturesque location in the south of County Carlow. That's where St. Molling founded a monastery on the eastern bank of the Barrow in the early 7th century. Prior to his arrival, the place was known as Rinruishbrock, the Wood of the Badger, and this is the precise spot where the River Barrow ceased to be either tidal or navigable, and it was a sort of oak wood above the stream pools of the Barrow. In pre-Christian times, this was the last port of call on the Barrow for any boats coming from Britain or maybe from Europe, where they could bring merchandise to exchange with the indigenous people of this part of the world, which was itself a kind of border between the kingdoms of Leinster and Ossory. So with all that trading, it had a bit of a reputation as a rough spot before Molling set up his hermitage here. Who was Molling, or Mullins as he's variously called? Well, some say he was a boatman who ferried pilgrims across the Barrow. Others have him pegged as a miller who dug a mill race to this very spot with his own bare hands, as well as digging a holy well. The waters were so highly regarded that zillions of people would come to St. Mullins over the centuries that followed to wash and purify themselves so that the filth of their sins in the very washing will, by grace of God, be washed away. What sort of numbers are we talking about? Well, amazingly, there was a fellow called John Clynne, or John Cline, who wrote a diary in 1348. Now, that's 600 years after the time of Mullins, but 1348 is also a long time ago, and it's an amazing record to have. John Clynne was a Franciscan friar based in Kilkenny, and he went to St. Mullins one autumnal day to join in on a pilgrimage. In his diary, he tells us that he was by no means alone. Great numbers of bishops and prelates, ecclesiastical and religious, peers and others, and in general people of both sexes flocked together, so that many thousands might be seen there together for many days. Some came out of devotion, but the greater part for fear of the pestilence which raged at that time with great violence. John Cline was writing in 1348, which is when the Black Death was running rampant across Europe, but we'll save the Black Death for another day. The buildings scattered around St. Mullins today are generally 11th, 12th century, some 15th, but you've got an oratory reputedly roofed with wood from the sacred yew of Ross, and a well, a belfry, a bunch of walls, part of an old high cross, and perhaps, above all, an amazing ambience of serenity. Every time I meet anyone who's been to St. Mullins, they say, "God, I had no idea it was so beautiful." Staying on the River Barrow, let's follow it north and you'll reach Ullard on the west bank, another church, this one founded by St. Fiacre, the patron saint of gardening and taxis and people with venereal disease. A random hat trick, but there we go. If the story be true, and please have your salt pinches handy throughout this episode, Fiacre was the go-to man in Ireland for herbal remedies when he was in his 20s, but he became too popular, so much so that he felt compelled to flee the maddening crowds, and he sailed for France, where he established a sort of backpacker's hospice or guest house at Briel, about 50 kilometres east of Paris. He also planted vegetables and herbs there, and his garden has since evolved into the present-day commune of St. Fiacre. And St. Fiacre of Briel is considered a very important guy in that part of the world. So Fiacre's story starts off on the Barrow. If you kept going up that river 1,000 years ago up the Barrow, you'd have found a place called Rathmelshiga. It's near Clonmelsh, and it was a monastic school, just a short stroll from the riverbank. The site has been gobbled up by a quarry in recent times, but this was where the eminent St. Willibrord was educated. Willibrord? Who he? Well, Willibrord went on to become the first bishop of Utrecht, the first apostle of the Frisians, and he is also the patron saint of Luxembourg. That's who he, another extremely well-known saint in Europe, edumacated on the banks of the River Barrow. Onwards up the river, Old Lochlann. Again, the River Barrow would have been absolutely key to daily life here when Old Lochlann housed 1,500 monks during the 7th century, so again, about 1,400 years ago. These Irish monastic schools were boarding schools in ancient times. I'm not sure how elite they were, but if you were a part of the elite, a king or a chief, well, you'd probably be keen for your little boy to go and learn a bit of theology and divinity and maybe some practical subjects too, commerce, agriculture, Greek, Latin, science. Think of these places as the prototype of our universities. Old Lochlann was also the venue for a massive event in Irish history which connects to the date on which Easter Sunday falls. Long, long ago, Easter Sunday was a day in which the Christian world marked the resurrection of Jesus Christ. These days, of course, it's about the Easter Bunny and how many chocolate eggs you can stuff into your knapsack by lunchtime. In any event, back in 630 AD, there was a synod in Old Lochlann. That's a gathering of all the church bigwigs. And it was at this synod that they decided that the Irish church should abandon the old Celtic date for Easter Sunday and instead follow the Roman date for Easter Sunday. It sounds a little bit small fry now, but it was an immense moment back then because that's really when Ireland began to become Roman Catholic rather than simply Christian. And that decision was made on the banks of the River Barrow. Okay, I'm still on the River Barrow, where four churches in, and we've already racked up the place where Easter Sunday was decided, a major pilgrimage site, a couple of pretty chunky early medieval schools, and the patron saints of Luxembourg and gardening and so on. We'll skip up the Barrow past Lochlann Bridge and Carlow, and just north of Carlow, close to Knockbeg College, there's the remains of another ancient monastery at Slaty, again right on the Barrow. The head honcho here at Slaty in the 7th century was a fellow by name of Aid, and he commissioned one of the very first biographies of St. Patrick, a couple of hundred years after the death of the great saint. If you wander around the monastery at Slaty today, you'll find some very, very old world crosses in the ground and a wonderful atmosphere too, very serene. Onwards again to Monastrevin, a big town on the Barrow line of the Grand Canal. Monastrevin is named for Saint Evan, who, sticking with that Saint Paddy theme, apparently wrote another of those early biographies of Saint Patrick. Evan was a member of Munster's royal family. About 1,400 years ago, the story goes, he settled here on the banks of a tributary of the Barrow by present-day Moor Abbey, and he settled along with 50 fellow monks, also from Munster, so the community was known for a long time as Rusglas na Muinach, the Greenwoods of the Munster Men. You're hopefully starting to get a clear picture from that one river of how many monasteries there were. I've skipped through Athy, which also has a heap of churches, although they were kind of later on Anglo-Norman foundations. But there were a bunch more churches all along the Barrow. Ruins for the most part these days, you know, rubble and stone, but there's also graveyards and granges and holy wells. Now, I should add here that many of these sites are on private land, so just because they're ancient, that doesn't necessarily mean you are entitled to stroll onto the land to view them. You will need to investigate that further with the local tourist board or the heritage officer, perhaps. But the Barrow is just one of Ireland's many ancient rivers. Go to almost any river, or indeed lake, in Ireland and you will find the same deal going on. Churches and abbeys and monastic schools in abundance. The River Boyne in County Meath gets you the great ecclesiastical school of Clonard, a household name in the early medieval period with 3,000 students at its peak, some coming from as far away as Germany and France. Or go north to Belfast Lough and you'll find Bangor Abbey, another hugely important centre of learning and Christian zeal. Bangor had a celebrated scriptorium where monks would sit and transcribe ancient works. The students also learned how to write, and amazingly we can see some of the words they wrote and the doodles they doodled in surviving manuscripts from the 7th and 8th century. In the margins of one such work, for instance, somebody wrote, "Let no reader blame this writing, for my arm is cramped from too much work." In another, a student has written, "Alas, my hand, it is time for dinner." And it's always very refreshing to find such glimpses of humanity and humour in ages past. But probably the most famous monastic school in medieval Ireland was the one on the River Shannon at Clonmacnoise. Established by St. Kieran in 548 AD, Clonmacnoise was built on the wet, boggy eastern banks of the Shannon, which doesn't sound very promising as a place to build anything, but somehow it flourished and it too became a famous seat of learning, a sort of university, with umpteen hundreds of students flooding in from all over Europe between the 7th and 12th centuries. And this would, you know, these were the closest equivalent you'd have found to a town in those days, these communities that specialised in education as well as art and metalworking and manuscript illumination and that sort of thing. At Clonmacnoise today, you can see what is apparently the largest collection of early Christian grave slabs in Western Europe. On top of that, you have the ruins of a cathedral, 7 churches, 3 high crosses, 2 round towers, and a partridge in a pear tree. Well, maybe not the latter. Pope John Paul II turned up at Clonmacnoise back in 1979. It was supposed to be a secret, but someone whispered to someone else, and by the time Il Papa rocked up, there were 30,000 people waiting to catch a glimpse of him. Clonmacnoise, as I say, is on the Shannon. Head south a little over 10 kilometres across the Shannon into the east of County Galway and you'll find the medieval cathedral of Clonfert, which Brendan the Navigator is credited with founding. And that became another major ecclesiastical school which had, again, about 3,000 plus students at its peak. Brendan, who is famed for taking his boat north to what sure sounds like Iceland if you read it, he's reputedly buried here in Clonfert. He arranged for his body to be taken here secretly and buried under an unremarkable rock so that his grave didn't stand out from the crowd. And the main reason he did that is because he didn't want his remains to be disinterred by relic hunters. Bear in mind that almost every other medieval saint seems to have had their body dissected into multiple parts, a bone here, a bone there, to be worshipped by the goodly pilgrims in the centuries to come. Other monastic schools on Irish waterways? Dermot the Just. He founded one on the island of Inchclearan in the north end of Lough Ree. There was another on Holy Island or Inishcaltra in Lough Derg, founded by St. Cuivin. And I have no doubt there were many more, but that's a kind of whistle-stop look at some of the churches along one of our rivers. I've just homed in on the River Barrow, as well as our monastic schools and secular lay schools that arose during the Golden Age when Ireland was renowned for its saints and scholars. Now, this is part one of a Waterways Ireland podcast double bill that is focusing on the spiritual aspect of the rivers and lakes. In part two, I want to home in on some of the monks who didn't want to be part of any monastic school or community. I'm talking about the hermits. the people who lived in splendid isolation, especially on the islands of Ireland's inland lakes and rivers, because their story, and the story of island monasteries in general, is another fascinating aspect of the story of Ireland's waterways. I'll end this episode with a verse from one of the world's first recorded boat songs. This was written by Columbanus, a missionary who had trained at Bangor Abbey, which I mentioned earlier. And having trained there, he headed into the depths of Europe in the early 7th century. And this was the ditty that his men apparently sang as they heaved upon the oars and rowed his boat up the majestic River Rhine. I have no idea how they sang it, so I shall simply say it. Low cut in forests, the driven keel passes on the stream of the twin-horned Rhine and glides as if anointed by the flood. Heave, my men! Let resounding echo sound our heave. Thank you so much for listening in, and you can hear more episodes from this series by searching Waterways Ireland on Spotify, Apple, Google, or whichever platform you use. You'll find all you need to know about Irish waterways at waterwaysireland.org or my archive of historical tales, mostly Irish, at turtlebunbury.com. My thanks to series producer Ali Bunbury and also to our technical producer, Liam Mulvaney, who composed the gorgeous music that you're listening to right now.